low, so anything you can do to support it would be greatly appreciated.
Okay, thank you, Doug. And I realize you're a non-agenda item, but it's good because you got to go first, even though you should have waited. I could have had you wait to the end, so. Yeah, that's all right. That's, can't see where the check marks were. Next up is Angela James. Angela, if you got to come on and approach the microphone, and it's all yours.
Thank you for giving me this opportunity to ask a question. I appreciate it. And I also want to say that I appreciate the information that was posted on the website this week, and my question regards the project document that was posted. In that document, it says that the corporation has reached its bonding capacity. And my question is, does the inability to borrow using bonds extend to other credit sources? And if so, how does this impact our ability to continue to operate should revenues not cover our necessary expenditures?
Okay. Typically, I mean, in the comment section, if you have an answer to that, and if not, Ross, we can get that answer for Angela at some point in time, right? Do you?
Yeah, I couldn't pick up everything. I think you asked about bonding capacity. I've heard that. And I think the board has said that we should try to do these projects without increasing the tax rate. So as we looked at what the amortization schedules would be in our tax rate, that's kind of an internal bonding capacity. I mean, as far as your percentage of debt and your ratios, I mean, we'd have more capacity to do smaller geo bonds or larger lease rental. And holding company, but I think the feeling of the board was, you know, we're at a point where we are comfortable and didn't want to extend it. I don't know if you had another question. I couldn't pick it up.
Typically, this isn't a question. This is a comment section. But go ahead, Angela. Go ahead. If he can answer, go ahead.
Well, yeah, but I'm not sure what the other question was.
No, go ahead, Angela. I'm sorry.
Oh, I appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you. So I guess the question then, when it sounds like the bonding capacity is set internally, it's not a state mandated capacity, or it's not set by our lenders?
Well, I mean, at some point, if you went way out of bounds, it would be. When we go to sell the bonds, you know, they look at your debt coverage and other ratios. I mean, so at some point, they could say, you know, you've reached your capacity.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it. Okay.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Randy Stute, comment on the budget, please.
Randy Stute, and I teach at West Lafayette High School. Anybody who knows me knows that I'm not the person to ask about numbers. So my question and my comment about the budget is very simple. First of all, I want all of us to be aware, and I'm sure the board is aware, I want the community to be aware as well, that if the state government does not address the issues of compensating corporations for online students versus in-class students, that we have an issue. So we're gonna have a problem down the road, which is looming, and I'm assuming that you all are doing a good job of planning for that, because you have done a good job up to this point, making sure we had a cash balance to be able to get ourselves through this. Many corporations, I have dealings with student teachers all around the state, many corporations are very, very shy on that and not able to do the things like we did with adding the seventh hour, the eighth hour pay for teachers who are overwhelmed at this point. A lot of the other issues that you've taken care of, adding staff, helping with getting substitutes and so forth. So I wanted to thank the board for making plans down the road. Thank the man sitting over there in blue as well, who's also kept you on track. And I want you to be aware that we are aware that that's only possible with great discipline. And I'm hoping that we can try to avoid the problems that the legislature will cause us once again. I would also argue that this board has been very good about looking ahead of time with the leadership you have, looking down the road to make sure that you are addressing those things the legislature might throw at us. So I wanted to thank you for that.
Thank you, Randy. Appreciate that. Unfinished business, I have none. New business, we'll go to budget adoption, and Ross, the floor is back to yours.
Okay, it's time to adopt the budgets for 2021, and we've gone through the necessary procedures for advertisement, and then you had the hearing at the last meeting in September. So now it's time to review and take action on the budgets. We have the education fund at $20,400,000, referendum fund at $7 million, debt fund at $7,236,000, operations fund at $7,961,000, rainy day fund at $1,038,135, so we're a total of $43,399,371. Now, I want to clarify one thing on our referendum fund. On our, Steve and I worked on the budgets together, which we've talked about before. We had in our work papers, when they did the referendum fund, I just want to clarify that in the referendum fund, that supports our instructional salaries and operational costs, you know, due to shortfall from state funding. We do not transfer any referendum dollars to pay debt. Now, there was a mistake on the one form one, which is your budget form. When we did our work papers, we go through a two-step process. We upload the Fink forms, who convert our data to Gateway, and in that conversion, there was a coding error, and on the one document, the referendum fund, it showed a debt category, and it showed a subcategory of debt payments. Well, that was an error that's been corrected. In the past, we've not paid debt out of referendum, and this budget is the same. It would not pay any debt out of the referendum. So I want to clarify that. I know I sent you out some correction material, and so if you got a question, let me know, but I just wanted to clarify that up front. So those budgets of 43 plus million includes the, in operations fund, you have a bus replacement plan, which, you know, it is for replacing of two buses in the 21 budget year. So as in the past, you know, our budgets are advertised high, levies are high. The levy is probably 3 to 4 million higher than what it will actually be, and I can show you history of, you know, last year our levies were advertised high. When they come down, they were in the 14 million range. But just the maneuvers we got to go through with the DLGF to do budgets, you always got to protect your backside in case something changes. If you don't advertise high enough, you could miss out on some revenue collection. We can always reduce it after we've advertised, but you cannot increase it. So that is why when you look at these levies and things, it looks like, you know, it's high and the tax rate may go up, but it's going to be reduced by several million. Because we're doing these budgets in July, and we're doing it, you know, 6 months before the end of the year, and we're doing it for the next year. We don't know the fall enrollment. We don't necessarily know the assessed valuation. We don't know our revenue collection, so we have a lot of estimates. So the practice is to estimate high on these numbers. And then once the DLGF gets our information, final approval is by the Department of Local Government Finance. I mean, Vice Steve and I sent them the paperwork, enter things online, and then later in December, January, they'll come back with final numbers, and then they will give us a budget adoption, which would show the approved budget, the levies, and the tax rate. Steve and our calculation is our tax rate, you know, right now we're $1.27 range. Our prediction is with when we take what we think it could be, it'll be real close, within a penny either way of that rate. I mean, we've had pretty success in the past keeping the rate at that level. You know, the referendum rate will not go above 37 cents. That was what was approved. The debt rate would not go above the 5370.5375, because that was the board's wishes when we started on all these projects. So that's kind of a summary of the budget. Now, to move it ahead, there's four resolutions, and I've asked Steve to comment on those.
So to adopt the budget, there are four resolutions. The first one is resolution for appropriations and rates. This has to do with the levy and the tax rates. Also, the board will move to adopt the bus replacement plan. A resolution to authorize transfers between funds, and again, this goes back to transferring funds from mainly from the referendum fund to operations and education. And then there is also a resolution to essentially allow flexibility to reduce expenditures and appropriations as needed so that we can maintain our cash balance where it needs to be going into the new year and beyond.
Okay, do we need to, and we need to adopt these individually?
I believe we can adopt them with one resolution if you so choose, or individually if you wish.
No, that's fine. I just didn't know in the past whether we've done it that way. I'll entertain a motion to adopt them all, please.
Move.
Okay, moved by Mrs. Prochnow.
I'll second, Marley.
Second by Mr. Marley. Discussion or questions? Again, this is the last part of a relatively 6-week process that we've been going through, but go ahead. Any other questions or comments?
Ross, the one concern that I have is the education fund at $20,400,000. Are you hearing anything at the state level on what they're doing, given that our collections are lower from a state sales tax perspective? Are you hearing anything yet?
Well, I've heard a few weeks ago, Steve and I were at a virtual meeting. Larry DeBoer spoke and was going to talk about this later. I'll just mention it now. His projection is, you go back to 2008 when we had the recession, and if we enter into another recession, let's say it's not this year, but next year or year after, plus keep in mind the state reduced state budgets 15%. They did not touch public education. The next critical one would be the forecast for 21. Larry DeBoer's comments, and Steve, correct me if I'm wrong, said if he feels it comes in 8 to 10% higher than anticipated, he foresees a budget cut to public education. And if you go back and mirror what happened in 2008, in 2009 and 10, and you remember those days when you didn't have much money and you did the referendum, our budgets, the state tuition per student was cut 19% from about in the high 6,000 per student to 4,800. And if we'd see that type, I did the calculation, if we see that kind of impact again, now we won't see it this year, maybe not next year, but that's about $2 million. If you take our enrollment and you reduce our per student funding 15%, then you probably will see some reduction.
Okay. And we're already $400 a student lower than we were in 2009, which is a $1 million cut.
Right, yeah, we've never come back to that level.
The foundation amount. Yeah.
That's the number I'm worried about. I'm worried about what the state's gonna send us, what they're gonna approve.
And see, keep in mind too, I mean, like when Steve and I did this budget, we're doing this in to get through all the hoops you gotta do. You know, we gotta anticipate, we're doing it in July. Some of this stuff hit harder later on, and there's a lot of unknowns. And typically the education fund, I mean, we don't spend 100% of any of the funds. So if this hits, you know, we're usually on the education fund, I'd say in the low to mid 90s is what we have historically spent when it was general fund and now education fund. And so if you see this happening, you know, you're gonna have to, one, rely on more cash balance, or two, or a combination of that, make reductions. So that's the scary part of some of these unknown numbers that we could look at.
And having gone through this and lived it, 2008, 2009, 2010, let me just quickly go through this. 2008, the state took over general funds and then started decreasing our funding, or indicated they were going to decrease our funding from about $6,200 down to $4,800 over the course of 7 years. We did community forums, we brought in financial experts. In 2009, we laid off 10% of our staff. Thanks to the Education Foundation, they raised quite a bit of money to bring some of those staff members back, but remember, that's one-time money. When you spend it, you have to go fundraise again, and then we talked about a referendum. Our community approved that in 2010, and in my opinion, that's what saved the school district from having to lay off 20% plus staff members and having class sizes in the 30s. And if you might recall, Dr. David Hummels, Dr. Larry DeBoer were the ones that did those financial analysis, and they were absolutely correct. By the time we got to 2013, 2014, Our base ADM was down around $4,800, $4,900 per student. And if it weren't for the referendum, we would have been cutting arts, music, PE, sports, extracurricular, laying off teachers. And as Dr. DeVore said in 2016, when we did the renewal of the referendum, 25%, about 25% of our budget has been based on the referendum. So if this repeats, now just think about this, if this repeats in 2023-24, and we already have a referendum, it's going to be a very difficult time to try to figure out what you're going to do next as a school district to protect those programs. And so I think it's very important that everyone just remember that it's going to, we have to be looking not at today, but looking at 23-24 and thinking about what we need to be doing over the next year to prepare for those eventualities. Because if you don't prepare for it, it's too late. And that's why it's good to have financial experts a part of this conversation, because it's going to be, I think it's going to be a hard financial couple of years for public schools.
What are things we could be looking at or anticipating this far out? I mean, how do you do that?
Well, I think you do a couple of things. One, I think what you have to do is to start educating the community about what the possibilities are. And so I would say in 21-22, there would be financial presentations and projections, much like what we did with Dr. DeVore and Dr. Hummels back in 2010 and Dr. DeVore in 2017. Once you know those projections, then I think you have to ask some questions. What's going to be the deficit and how do you make up that deficit? So is it a higher referendum? Is it laying off staff? If it's fundraising, what are all the combinations? What are the ideas that we can all achieve together? And what is it that this community wants to do? That's what we did in 2009, 2010. That's what we did in 2016, 2017. And I think that's what you're gonna have to do in 22, 23 to be ready, because this referendum that we're in now ends in 2024. So just from a 30,000 foot view, that's some things that you can do. I also think there are some revenue generating ideas that we could consider, and Happy Hollow is one of those. I think if we can continue to use that property appropriately and try to catch more lease opportunities until we can get the funds to convert it, you can have some funding there. Also, I think Ross would agree that if our assessed valuation can continue to increase, especially in the TIF districts, you start capturing that money to move it into the budget areas that need to be filled. So I think there's all kinds of combinations, but if you're not prepared to do that, if you've not had those conversations, you can't flip a switch and say, oh, by the way, we're going to do this. So that, I mean, just from a quick analysis, that would be my take on it.
I had one other question for Ross. Ross, on the referendum fund, the adopted rate, is that maxed out at 0.6358?
Well, that's why the way we have to do these, I don't like it, because it's an inflated rate. So what we do to make it work and play the games of the DLGF so we can capture all the revenue, you advertise a lower assessed valuation and a higher tax rate. So you, that gives you a levy high enough that if there's a growth in the AV or something unique out there we haven't anticipated, we don't lose that opportunity. So you gotta make those combinations to advertise a high levy, you know, like the levy, advertised for the referendum fund. Let's see, we advertised 6.9 million with a low AV and high rate. Now I know that's more than what we'll probably collect, because history shows you'll collect, you know, around 5.5 million, but I don't want to lose out. on any possibility of some revenue. You know, something strange happens in the budget process, you haven't advertised high enough, you can't rate, you know, if you didn't have your levy high enough and it comes in, you could have collected more. Well, too bad, you're not only gonna collect what you advertised. So the rate will be 37 cents.
All right, thank you.
Thanks. Any other questions, comments?
I just have one, Rocky. With the leasing opportunities at Happy Hollow School, what about the maintenance with that building? Are we responsible for that? Is the leasee responsible for that? I don't want to get into a situation where we're responsible for that and it's costing us more to lease it than we're making.
Whenever we lease that building as we are now, maintenance, electric, all of that stuff is contained within that lease.
Okay.
So it's I think it's just a good opportunity for revenue. Ross is more in tune with the contractual side of it, but that's my understanding how we do it.
That's correct, right. Like with the city, you know, they take care of the maintenance, pay a percentage of the utilities, pay insurance on the building. So it's important, like Rocky said, if we can find a leased opportunity for another tenant, at least for a few years till the board sorts out what direction we're gonna go, I think that'd be a great opportunity to consider.
Any other questions? Brian or Brian, okay. All in favor of the motion to adopt the budget as stated, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. And opposed? Hearing none, that motion does carry. Thank you, Ross and Steve, for all your work, especially. I mean, it's, I know it's a lot of questions, a lot of time to get this done. We appreciate it. Keep kidding. So we'll move to academic achievement, and Dr. Killian, you are up next on West Lafayette Community School Corporation updates.
Sorry, Dr. Chet, it's taken us a while to get to you. Can you hear me? Dr. Chet, can you hear me?
No worries.
All right, great. Dr. Chet Ho, and we got Dr. Anne Marie, which Biancalli.
Biancalli.
Biancalli?
Yeah.
I always have trouble. I would like for them to give everyone an update with regards to what's going on with our reopening plan, where we've started, where we've come from. These two wonderful people are basically our best friends on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. They're typically contacting us, giving us direction, giving us guidance, checking with the Tippecanoe County Health Department. And I asked them a while back if they would present some information. So I think Dr. Chet has his, if you can do it there, Chet, I'll let you run the slideshow between you and Anne Marie, and we'll go from there.
Okay, no problem. So the only issue is if your tech person is standing nearby, it says host has disabled screen share. So you have to allow me to screen share.
Okay. I love this stuff.
At the top, it should say this little button that says allow participants to or each of your friendly neighborhood tech person.
Waiting room screen share on. Okay, try that.
All right, perfect, thank you.
While he's pulling that up, I'm Anne Marie Biancalli. I am a pediatrician with IU Health Arnett. I am a 2002 Westside grad, and I'm one of the school physicians this year. So they asked us to talk about our COVID response and the reopening plan, and I think Chet should be able to pull up that next screen, which basically shows that it's a multidisciplinary plan. So it is not just dependent on us as pediatricians, but we highly rely on our school nurses. Nicole Wagenkamp is our nurse at the elementary school. Beth Bangs and Chris Anderson, who are here in the front row, here at the intermediary school, and then Amanda Holderly at the junior senior high. You've got both physicians, myself and Dr. Ho, both Westside grads. We appreciate all the help from the administration, the teachers, the staff. The parents and students have really seemed to buy into this plan, which is making a success. Like Dr. Hillian said, the health department and Dr. Adler have been great resources through all this. And then like at the clinics, they are just, I mean, I see these patients every day. So getting them back to school where we'd like them to be has been very helpful. So part of the plan, we created a dashboard so then you can see, and so the public can see where our numbers are and how we are doing as a community. And basically the way we created this dashboard is we basically took the number of kids that were tested and then their positive results. And the way we got these results is our fabulous nurses are calling, and when kids are out of school, they're finding out, why are they out of school? Were they tested? And then the positive results are either coming from the parents themselves or from the health department. We're not tracking everybody that's being quarantined. We're relying on the attendance system to do that. And the one caveat is we don't have great numbers on the online only. However, it really does not change much of what is actually going on in the school system. So we are less concerned about that. And this is like our dashboard to date. We had a couple very early on in the summer with our sports teams that we kind of watched, and we weren't tracking positivity rates at that point because nobody was in school, but we did, as you can see, that first week have 4 positive cases in students and 1 in a staff member. And then we had 3 excellent weeks where we had absolutely no cases despite many people being tested. And just last week we had 1 positive in the elementary school. And so the positivity rate for that week was 4%, but overall we are well below 2% for the school. So. Yes. So basically from all of this, we have learned many things. Our nurses have been fabulous. They have been the workhorses doing everything, contacting everybody that is out, tracing everything, tracing siblings, anybody that's positive. Do they have siblings in the other schools so we can make sure that we're not potentially spreading that way? They are making sure that people are quarantined for appropriate times based on their symptoms or their test results. And we couldn't do this without constant communication. So we have a text group and all the nurses from all the schools are coordinating with ourselves, with themselves, and figuring out, okay, if so, Johnny is positive, who do we need to send home because of that? Do we need to keep home with siblings? Communication with the administration, with principals, with the athletic director, and Chet wanted to give particular recognition to Joel. I do not think he took public health into his role as athletic director, but he did a great job for us this summer making sure that we were not having outbreaks among the teams. And then again, the parents, I know this is very overwhelming, but the parents and students are doing a great job of actually reporting their symptoms so then we can get them care very early and minimize any spread. And then basically we've had a couple cases again, and they really highlight the importance of quarantining with any symptoms. So again, we had some early cases on some of the sports teams, the soccer teams, both male and female, and just showing that if we had not quarantined at the onset, that we would have had a much higher potential for spread because of the many contacts they had in sports. And then the case we had last week was in an elementary kids and had 2 siblings. And over the weekend, we talked as a team trying to figure out how do we need to adjust with the siblings. And what we ended up doing is we quarantined both the positive child's class and the younger sibling who was in kindergarten because of the potential for higher risk for spread. However, the older student was in the junior senior high school, and we felt that it was less risk of exposure, and so the child was quarantined, but not any classmates. And another thing we learned from this case is through the health department and the school nurse, there were no positive exposures for that positive child. So it just really highlights that there is the potential for asymptomatic, that some other classmate may have had it but not had any symptoms. So really what we've learned, the importance of social distancing, really wearing these masks, being good about washing hands, cleaning, and just again, how everybody's actions impact one another. So again, you can have asymptomatic children passing it on to others. I think that might be it. Okay.
Any questions for Dr. Chet and Dr. Anne Marie?
We're hearing now how the fall and winter are going to be so difficult. Is there any new additional messaging to that, or is it just the same?
Really, obviously, we're really recommending the flu shot. There's not much beyond the social distancing, masking, good hygiene. There's not much we can prevent them, but if we can minimize the flu with what vaccine we do have, hopefully it'll make this winter a little bit easier. I know in the clinics right now it's difficult. How are we telling us it's allergies, colds, COVID, and really we have to test, but again, if we can minimize the flu, hopefully that will help minimize things. I'm personally hoping for a better flu season just because we are doing all this stuff. So fingers crossed.
Thanks.
Thank you for all you're doing. I know this is a lot of work, and I am very grateful to have such trusted medical professionals to help guide us through this.
Yeah, I'll say I'm kind of partial to nurses, but our nurses are doing a fantastic job. And it's combat pay on a daily basis for all of you, and we appreciate Chet especially too, that you're offsite a little bit, that your ability to weigh in has really been a big help, to say the least. And we know very clearly that this is far from over, but this is a challenge still ahead.
All right, I think they all deserve a round of applause.
Yes, thank you.
Dr. Chet, anything else?
Yeah, the only thing I'd say, just thanking everybody, but also as school board members and administration, you're going to probably hear sometimes people are going to be upset about some of the hardline quarantine or why we're sending kids away. But I think that's what we really want to highlight with these two cases, is that if we didn't quarantine those folks with the asymptomatic spread potential, we're going to see higher cases. So the biggest thing that we did actually quarantining, and that's what's kept our numbers really low.
Great.
I just want to make sure it's reach, and you guys are going to hear it from people, especially coming up in this coming months, and to be able to say, look, we trust the process, and it will, at this point, keep us safer.
And we are willing, whatever we need to do, if we have to shut down for a week, 2 weeks, whatever we have to do to keep everyone safe, there is a protocol in place to make that happen. And these wonderful individuals are great nurses. And let me just say this, we're one of the few school districts out there that have registered nurses in every building. You would be hard pressed to find in a school district registered nurses at all buildings, but we have done that intentionally, and we've been doing that for years. So I give credit to previous school boards, previous administration, current school board, current administration, because we do believe in having registered nurses at our schools. All right, I'm gonna let you go, Dr. Chet, so you can watch basketball.
Thank you very much, appreciate it.
And I still
have—
Thanks.
Thank you, Chet.
Hang on just a second.
Okay.
I'm gonna try to get out of this. I'm gonna try to get into here, because we still have a couple of things to just share if I pull this off.
Oh, you're gonna still pull them up, okay.
So just give you some quick school data. Our current enrollment right now is 2,318, and that's down a few students since our last meeting. Now that we've gotten through all the withdrawals, all of the checking, all the IDs, last meeting we were projecting a projected decrease in our ADM was in the mid-40s, but looks like actually it went up to, from the slide, so we're minus 85. I just didn't get a chance to change that slide. So we are 85 fewer students this year than we were last year, which means you multiply that by about $5,700, $5,800. That's how much less we're gonna receive from the state this year in our budget. Our on-site enrollment has grown a little bit, 1,439 students. Our e-learning enrollment has gone down a little bit, 879 students. And again, thank you to our doctors, to our nurses, to our AD, to our administration, to everyone that's working hard to ensure that our protocols are working and being adapted day by day and week by week. And as a reminder, we have this COVID dashboard on our website, so you can keep track of where we are and what's going on. Now I'm gonna turn it over to Ross, because I want him just to give you a brief explanation of where we are financially with all of this. Because if God forbid anything ever happens to Ross, you know, I don't want anyone not knowing the financial cost of all of this during this pandemic, which is unusual, but you need to know it.
Okay, thanks, Rocky. In order to keep Steve in the loop here, so he knows, we're gonna do this in two parts. He's gonna talk about the cost, our expenses. I'm gonna follow up a little bit on what our anticipated loss of revenue might be.
So our costs related directly to COVID kind of break down into several areas. One is technology needs. Another is sanitation supplies, PPE, things of that nature. And then there's also additional staffing costs that go along with our COVID adaptations. So in the realm of technology and cleaning supplies, we were able to secure a grant, a CARES grant of $143,000, which we're applying toward cleaning supplies for one, and also some additional Chromebooks to be used at the elementary schools. We've incurred costs of about $63,000 related to cleaning supplies, plexiglass, PPE, signage, and like things. $1,300 for Zoom subscriptions to accommodate online IEPs, for example. One-to-one devices, this was the technology I referred to earlier, about $72,000. We've also hired permanent subs for each building to allow flexibility in staffing and to keep some of the same personnel on staff to reduce potential quarantines. That's about $185,000. And additionally, we have stipends to pay for additional work hours and responsibilities for staff, for teachers. About $323,000 for a total of $643,000. Again, about $143,000 of this direct cost will be offset by the CARES grant, which we'll be able to submit for reimbursement soon.
Thanks, Steve. And one thing we don't know, you know, like he mentioned about the cleaning supplies and things, that is what we spent on those supplies to date. Now we're, what, about 9 weeks into the school year? And some of these supplies will last longer, but I don't know, we have to anticipate more cost here if we continue this trend through the rest of the year. So we not only have these costs, extra expense, Rocky mentioned about our ADM went down 85. Well, keep in mind what I said a little while ago, Steve and I worked on the budget in July, and we don't know what the ADM is gonna be in middle September, but all the budget documents have to be implemented and uploaded. So we didn't use such a drastic reduction in our anticipated state revenue. So, it, you know, again, it was a kind of a guess, but if we're down 85 and you lose, we roughly get about a little over almost 6,000 per student. That's around 500,000 of revenue loss for this 2021 school year. Now keep in mind, the fall count for September generates revenue from July to December. And now we have a February count that'll generate per student revenue from January to June of 21. And when we're talking about our budget, we're talking our budget is a calendar year budget, not fiscal year of July to June. So this 500,000, if we have a high count in February, will help offset that. You know, if we have maybe students come back, or maybe some, if they were out of the country and they come back, I mean, hopefully that would help. The other part I'm kind of concerned about is, Steve and I talked about this today. Remember the state was talking about, well, the virtual count students, you're only gonna give you 85%. Well, the commitment that we understand from the state so far, we'll get 100% of that count for the September count, but it's pretty gray for the February count. So if the February count comes in, because they said the September count, if all those students were on site last February, you can count them 100%. So now when the February count comes around, if they say, well, we're gonna not reduce your revenue, however, we will only give you 85% of each virtual student. I mean, that to me is an unknown. If that would happen, that would be another loss of about 400,000, with the virtual students only getting 85%, not 100%. That, we don't know that for sure, but that certainly would be a way the state could say, we didn't cut your funding, but indirectly they did, because they didn't give you 100%. Because in the law, it does say you get 85% for virtual students. So they can say, well, and I've heard this from legislators, we have to follow the law, and it says 85%. the governor's commented that he would fully fund. So it'd be interesting to see how that turns out. We already talked about state funding, you know, Brad had a good question on what we expect ahead, and we've commented on that. One other part I want to mention is your property tax collection, because that funds a lot of our budgets too. And remember, they delayed taxes for the penalty, you know, normally it's May 10th, but it was delayed later, and so your collections were slow. So I compared what we collected percentage-wise this year to last year when they were on time collection. Normally our tax collection by the end of June is around 53% of what the approved levy is. This year, at the end of June, we were 43%, but then they collected, you had people pay in July, and then that was your first 6 month settlement, then that brought us up to 49%. Which actually I thought was pretty good considering everything, and I thought could be worse than that. So now it'd be interesting to see what our final settlement will be in December. Are there people that are gonna not pay because of being out of work, or, you know, that'll really tell the story for the full year, and we won't know that final collection till the end of December. So that's another thing it could impact. And again, in Larry DeBoer's presentation the other week, his concern is if you see economic decline, what will that do to your AV? You know, like back, you know, we may, you know, typically we've had good growth of our AV, 2%, 2 to 4%, you know, pretty steady. But if you look back several years ago, there are times when it could be pretty flat. And so if you have a flat AV and your rate is levy driven, I mean, you could have a higher tax. To raise the same money, you got to have a higher tax rate if you got a lower AV generating that revenue. So, like Rocky said, we hope these things don't happen, but I think as a board, you need to be prepared with these things that are going to come up in the next, I would say, not this year, but you'll probably start to see it maybe next fall and a couple years after that. And I think a good indication will be what you're gonna do with this virtual learning business in February, you know, give us where the state government's leaning. So I'd give you good news, but I think we gotta be realistic where we're at too. But fortunately, I mean, we can weather the storm. I mean, you know, like Steve said, we got 500,000 here of unexpected cost. I mean, we got some, I mean, we can cover it, but it's not expected, it's not what we like. I mean, you gotta have a cash balance on these kind of things, or you're really going to be scrambling and trying to make reductions to cover your shortfall.
Yeah, Ross, I'm glad you mentioned there's some level of good news somewhere. I don't know where it is. I think one thing too is one of the things with the cash balance that's been important has been our ability to, we've always wanted to have a year's worth of cash balance due to referendum, and the possibility that if a referendum isn't passed down the road, that we would have some buffer. And that's what's really where the bottom line is going to be with this, is if we don't have that, you know, that's not there at that point, that opens us up to a whole nother level of a challenge in 23-24, whenever that comes to pass. So you never want to assume that we can pass a referendum. We've had success the last two ones, but, you know, we understand that. So any other questions or comments?
Ross, I just had a question. The 49% collection, that is, that was for this year. It was 53 the year before. Is that a normal? Because I thought that we actually had a pretty high collection last year.
Well, I was just doing a benchmark as of June.
Okay.
Typically, all of our property tax collections will average. See, remember the circuit breaker takes about $1 million away from us every year in the debt fund and operations fund. So typically, our referendum fund is a higher percent of collection because the circuit breaker doesn't hit the referendum fund. So last year was a good year for the referendum fund. We collected 103%.
Right.
And that's one reason that we were able to end the year without deficit spending, because we had that 103%. It was a good cash intake. But typically, we'll be in, I've seen it to 89% on the other funds, as high as 94%. So it's just the range, and so the target, so I'm thinking this year, if we were normally 53% now, but we're 49, I mean, we're pretty much on track, but I could see being a little short you know, this end of the year, but hopefully, maybe that was just a delay and everything will collect on time by December, I hope.
Okay. Okay. Rock, you heard from the doctors about why we've been successful at this point with the opening and staying open, but what are you hearing anecdotally as far as learning and teachings going on? Most of what I hear is it's going well. There have been some challenges you'd expect. No one's ever done this before, but what are some themes you've heard from the educational end of things?
Well, I think overall, everyone is doing their best to follow the protocols. At the elementary, I think that's probably the greatest challenge of making sure the little ones are doing everything they need to do. And the elementary teachers are the ones that I think probably have the toughest job, in my opinion, with regards to helping the little ones, and they're doing a fabulous job. I try to get in there every week to see what's going on. Probably the challenge is coming up, you know, that every 9 weeks we're allowing people to jump out and in. And so as those numbers change, if you get more students coming in, then you're going to have to rearrange and reshuffle, as we said in July, the classes. And so I think the challenge is going to be which kiddos are going to need to be readjusted so that you can try to keep the density lower in those classrooms. But I give 100% credit to our teachers, to our students, to our parents. I think everyone is just working as hard as they can to make sure everyone's following the protocols, and I think that's one of the reasons we've been as successful as we have thus far.
All right, any other comments or questions? All right, we'll go back now to school board policy updates, and Dr. Killian.
Yes, again, we're following Indiana code requirements, and the policy committee is updating school board policies based upon Indiana code, so we're recommending the adjustments per the policy committee.
Okay, need a motion, please?
So moved.
Moved by Dr. Springer.
Second.
Second by Mrs. Witt. Discussion questions. This has been an ongoing process, again, for literally decades, it seems.
No.
Not decades, but
we're ahead. Still working on the spring updates, and just one for you tonight. We'll have more at the next meeting. We're hoping to have the spring policy updates completed into the board for our November meeting. And then April tells me then that we'll be starting to work on the fall updates.
Okay. Other questions or comments on the line? Okay, all in favor of the motion to adopt the school board policy updates, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Hearing none, that motion does carry. Now we'll move on to personnel report, and Dr. Killian, back to you.
Recommend all the names listed in the personnel report for your consideration.
Okay, again, need a motion, please?
So moved.
Okay, moved by Mr. Schott, second by Mrs. Prock now. Again, this is a document that we see in advance.
You should have seen.
Okay.
Because some of you.
Any discussion, please? Okay, all in favor of the motion to accept the personnel report, please say aye.
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 Opposed?
Alan, I'm going to abstain with the son as one of the hirees, so.
Okay, fair enough. One abstention. All in favor, please say aye. I didn't hear any nays. Okay, the motion carries with the one exception noted. Thank you, Tom. Accounts payable and Mr. Sloat, it's back to you.
Okay, we have $4,020,521.52, includes two payrolls, payroll deductions, our claims and WEVEC claims. You know, keep in mind, WEVEC, Wabash Valley Education Service Center, runs all their payroll and claims through, you know, you're their LEA, so that's why you keep seeing this stuff on the docket. And then with our construction projects of $1,000,001. A couple comments. You've seen payments to Lafayette School Corporation is around $135,000. That was our last quarterly payment for our glass participation, our dues. Do we pay glass? Accident fund was the last quarterly payment for the workers' comp policy for this year. And then ECA, you might wonder why we paid ECA Boilermaker Aquatics. What happened there, a check came in, we didn't realize, somebody was paying Boilermaker Aquatics for like, you know, their participation, and come in and we deposited it. We would have liked to have kept the money, but really wasn't ours, so we had to write a check back to Boilermaker Aquatics ECA account was really the one where that should have gone, so that's why you see that on there. Then we tried to give a little better explanation of how this Huntington business works with the charges that we put. And the reason we use a credit card is because, one, you can see you don't have to write so many checks. I mean, in Huntington, it's an automatic debit from our account to make the payment, so it saves some paperwork to do it. It's just that we're still working with our software company to get better detail, and I hope that explanation helped that we attached in the packet to break out, because sometimes descriptions are not correlated with what the actual expenditure was. But so we'd recommend approval of the claims.
Okay, need a motion, please?
So moved, Marley.
Moved by Mr. Marley.
Second.
Second by Dr. Springer. Melissa, you waved, but
well, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
And opposed? Hearing none, that motion carries. We do see all the accounts payable documents, and again, as part of our packet in advance, and usually, too, that's our time to ask specific questions, and what Ross was mostly pertaining to, some of the questions we've asked. Information to the board. I have none at this moment. Board and superintendent reports. We'll go around the horn. I know with COVID, we haven't had quite as many committee meetings, but I will go all the way down. Brian, anything from your end?
I have nothing.
Okay, Melissa.
I'm going to defer to Tom.
Okay. And Rachel?
Nothing.
Okay. Tom?
Doug highlighted the virtual teacher trot to coming up at the end of the month. Again, I encourage people to participate in that and help out our teachers. Regarding teacher grants, this year they're going to do grants both semesters. First one due at the end of October. They'll be awarded by Thanksgiving. Second one, the due date, second semester, mid-March, and they'll be notified in mid-April. And that's all from the Education Foundation.
Okay. Mr. Marley, anything from your
Nothing new to report, sir.
Kate? Karen?
Park Board continues to meet virtually. The West Lafayette Wellness Center is scheduled to open January 2021. They're on schedule, under budget. Tours for the public are going to take place late fall. I know they're having a media day here in October, so there'll be media announcements about that as well. Work on the Happy Hollow Dog Park is slated to start soon. And then the Case and Family Park Phase 1 construction is slated for March through November 2021, with an opening of the Phase 1 Case and Family Park set for spring 2022.
Okay, thank you. One comment I was going to make just on we've had, you know, had ability to have virtual meetings here, or not virtual meetings, but have it streamed. And there's been some requests about the ability to have public comment during that time. We are working not only on the legal part of that, but secondly on the ability to do that for people that can't attend the meetings in person, because we do, as you know, have two communication from the audience for agenda and non-agenda items, typically limited to a 3 minute or under situation. But so just to keep an FYI for that. Communication from the audience, non-agenda items. We don't have anybody signed up since I let Doug go early. Future meetings, our next meeting will be Monday, November 2nd. At 6:30 p.m. Scheduled for here at Willis. Need a motion for adjournment, please.
I move.
Moved by Mrs. Prochnow.
Second.
Second by Mrs. Witt. All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
And opposed? Hearing none, that motion carries. Thank you. You can applaud if you want. No, don't applaud.